Hello, everybody, and welcome to another amazing episode of Suits and Shoes. Today, I am honored to have on our show Senator Hawley. Senator Hawley, you have an extraordinary story, starting from a teen mom running for Missouri Senate, currently running for Lieutenant Governor, three children, have a book. You've made so much change in Missouri from the different in initiatives and acts that you've pushed through, one of which being Save Women's Sports. And it just seems like you're everywhere and doing so much. What does it take to be Senator Hawley?
Such a fun question. So thank you for having me on. Just being original and authentic. I spent 8 years in the House, and I've been in the Senate for 4 years. And the things that I ran on my very first time as being that person who was really frustrated with government and a small business owner, a girl who, as you said, I had to quit school at 15 to help take care of my family. I got married at 15. I got pregnant at 15. I had my first baby at 16. I was homeless at times, and so the things that motivated me to first run are still the things that motivate me and that I'm passionate about. And so just being honest and always having a backbone. I grew up in the trailer parks, so I don't mind being, I'm scrappy. I don't mind a fight. And just keeping that as my core and my center, and it's fighting for the people who come from the places that I do, that really aren't used to having someone fight for them.
That's extraordinary. So many times people they'll say like, "Hey, you're born with the silver spoon." I get all the time like, "Oh, your dad started your business," or your uncle, gave you the funding." How do you feel that your childhood and these harsh experiences that you had early on attributed to your success early on in your career?
We moved over 30 times from the end of my third grade to the beginning of my 10th grade, which is when I had to quit school to help take care of my mom. My mother struggled with mental illness. One of my stepdads was a drug dealer. When things would go south, we would hop a Greyhound bus and go to the next place. So I've lived from Florida, California, Texas multiple times. We always landed back in Southeast Missouri. And it was just in being a part of, damn it, I'm sorry.
Pardon?
I said, damn it, I'm sorry. I
You're
know that y'all will
fine.
cut that out.
We're in Missouri.
Tell me the question
Yeah,
again.
so how do you feel that shaped, because a lot of times people say in order to be successful, you
Oh,
need a silver
silver spoon.
spoon,
Yeah.
but
So
you
it
had it
made me
hard.
think.
So how did that shape you into your
Yeah.
success today?
Standing in the free lunch line at school is what motivated me to never want my children to have to do that. And so for me, fighting through it and still being a fighter, but I know that God has blessed me so much with being able to change that for my children. So my children, weren't born with a silver spoon in their mouth, but they certainly had more opportunity than I had. And that's what we want. That's the American dream. That's what, as parents, we want to provide our kids. And then me, as a public servant, that I want to provide for my constituents is to be able to have the American dream, to be able to have opportunity, and we have that here.
That's extraordinary. I actually I have a similar story too. I think it's nowhere near as the hardships that you went through, but my family immigrated here from Ukraine. I was about 4 years old when we moved here, and according to my parents, my memory isn't the best at 4 years old. They say we moved here with a bag of two clothes
Oh
and
my goodness.
11 children, and so I
11
definitely
that
know
were all
what.
your parents or cousins?
No,
Oh,
that's just my
wow.
siblings. Yeah, I'm one of 11. And so I definitely can relate to the free lunches and standing in those lines. And I remember, standing at the checkout aisle with my mom. Her English wasn't the best, so we would translate and we're swiping the blue EBT card and it
Yeah,
getting
right, that's
declined and
right.
having to call the 1-800 number to find out, why the balance isn't there or why it wasn't and just going downtown and standing in those lines to reapply. Has definitely shaped my success as well. So I can really relate with you on that. I wanted to touch another point. We're in the Midwest.
Yeah.
You are a woman, and I know you face adversity, as humble as you may be, and say that, I want to say, we have equal opportunities, but you face adversity. Let's be honest. I want to talk about that. Can you share how you overcome that adversity, being a woman, not only pushing through the childhood that you had, but going into politics?
Right, and there is a big difference, you know. One of the things that I make sure to tell girls as they're, I spoke at Missouri's Girls State this week, and so that is girls that are juniors in high school that are interested in politics and get chosen to go and put this government together. And I went and spoke to them, and you know, I explained to them, it is different. It's different for women and men in politics. One example, when I was running for speaker, I was running against two guys. Relationships and building those relationships matter in politics. Where the guys that I was running against, they could go hang out at the bar till all hours of the night, right? And form those relationships with their buddies. Had I have done that, I would have been a hoe. So, like, you, there are, it is, it's, there's not, it's not
So
balanced.
how did you overcome all of that?
You have to keep fighting. And, you know, and I didn't win. And it was for many reasons. I'm better at leading a militia than I am the whole caucus. But you cannot take it and be bitter about it. You have to realize that, look, it's not, life is not fair. How can you work around it? You know, how can you do that? And one survey that I read a couple of years ago said that, you know, the reason that women don't run for office is they wait for someone to ask them to. Well, I've never waited. Don't wait. Like that is one of the things that if men have more backbone to say, hey, I belong at this table. Girls, women have to do that too. And that is something that I've never asked for permission. I've been on my own since I was 15, you know. I don't ask for permission. And if I have a burning desire in my gut, I go for it. And I take the risk. I mean, sometimes I win and sometimes I lose, and that's a part of life. You lose in life at many times. So you have to be okay with it.
It's definitely there. I call it a glass ceiling. It's there, I think, not only for women. I think it's there for first generation business owners. It's very, very much so there in corporate America. So many times I get women and immigrants and first generation and people that are trying to succeed, whether it's in business or politics or in church. And unfortunately, it's there. And I like how you highlight never give up. Could you give some examples of how, whether it's in politics or in corporate, you were able to overcome these challenges, like a specific example or specific story?
So, you know, I grew up in drug addiction, and my sister was an addict by the time she was 16. She married her 39-year-old dealer. My cousin died at 39 from a drug overdose. In the communities that I grew up in, I saw drugs as a way that hopeless people would, you know, to overcome their hopelessness. They really didn't have anything to look forward to. Fast forward to my daughter, who was raised in a two-parent home with multiple people, multiple family members around her and as a support system. She cut her thumb at work at 17, got it stitched up. They gave her Scopolamine. That began her 13 years of deep addiction. Now she's 13 years clean now, but it's because of my quasi understanding of addiction that when I got into office, I worked on the prescription drug monitoring program. And the prescription drug monitoring program is just an electronic medical record, but Missouri was the only state that didn't have this. And I was told, don't bother with it. You're never going to get this passed. And it was people in my party that was fighting me,
Your own people.
my own people. And it was a red herring because they just used it as a campaign, you know, slogan. Oh, it's an electronic medical record. It's not big government. It's electronic medical record. We've had those for years. Anyways, on dealing with adversity, I fought with them for 9 years.
Wow. 9 years.
Every year I brought it back until I finally passed it.
Wow.
And that's because I'm tenacious and it matters.
Yeah.
It mattered to people's lives. And even though, you know, I felt like God really quickened in my spirit, look, don't get mad. Show them. They don't know what they don't know. So I grew up in this, but the people that I was trying to get to come over to my side and vote for this bill had never grown up in addiction. They didn't have someone in their family that had become addicted. That, I mean, no high schooler, when you say, what do you want to be when you grow up, raises their hand and says, I want to be an addict.
Right.
That is not how it works. And so you have to keep pressing and care about something so much that you just stay in there until it's done. And you just keep pushing. And that's, I mean, fighting with my own party was difficult. Like I told you earlier, I'm scrappy, so I don't mind. But it was important to families.
Yeah.
You know, this is the only way that medical professionals can see what their patients are taking.
I mean, 9 years, that's not a week or two.
Right?
That's 9 years of fighting your own party. I can definitely highlight that in corporate and even in the church or any organization or walk of life. I'm pretty sure we can even connect it to marriage. You know,
right?
It's not a year or two. It's a lifelong commitment. Oftentimes,
that's right.
Oftentimes people will ask me, Paul, you know, you're an overnight success story. And I go, yes, sir. Or yes, ma'am. My overnight success story took 10 years to write.
That's what I started to say. Yeah. When people from the outside looking in might think that, but so many of them are not willing to walk down the road that you walk down, are not willing to sacrifice the things that you sacrifice to get
like
to where you're at.
The famous quote, you know, yesterday was hard. Today's harder.
Yeah.
Tomorrow will get easy, but most people quit. Most people quit tonight, the night before.
Right.
That's look, year eight. You know, what if you gave up year eight and all you had is one more year and you would have pushed through?
You have to be okay with failure. You know, and anyone that is successful, you know that.
Yeah.
Anyone that is successful will tell you that they had many failures along the way.
Yeah. My former VP told me that I need to start a social media page on my failures.
Oh.
Because I always post my success and people are like, you have it easy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm worried I would give people anxiety. Like, if I show them my failures and the hardships that I have to face on a daily basis.
Right. Because people are, and unfortunately, a lot of it is generational. You know, we want to make life easier for those, for our children.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of times we're harming them by putting that mattress under them when they fall.
Yeah.
And so you have to understand that balance, and you have to understand that, I mean, just like God allows us to fail, we can't, you know, dig our children out every time they get into, you know, adversity. They need to figure it out.
Yeah. Speaking of children, Kehoe's running for governor. I asked him, you know, what is your time commitment? And he said 24/7. But honestly, he's like, it's about 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I'm like, how do you work-life balance that? So right now you're in the Senate, you're running for lieutenant governor, little ones, like what's your go around to work-life balance?
Yeah. So I'm doing this with grown children. So my oldest is 38. My middle son is, just turned 33, and my youngest is 27.
So little ones.
So
my mom always says she calls me her baby, and I'm like, Mom, I'm 30 almost.
They are all my babies. They are my babies, and I have three grandchildren. The oldest is 14, and then 2 4-year-olds that are a week apart. And so I do my very best. I make sure you have to have that work life balance and church in there as well.
Yeah.
You know, I make sure every morning I start my morning off at 5 a.m., 4:45 or 5 a.m., and I do my Bible study at that time. Then I go to the gym.
Wow.
And so, then I get cleaned up and I get started on my schedule. And I do that And then I make sure at some point during the week, I'm spending time with my grandchildren and my children.
Wow.
And it's important for my heart
Yeah.
and my health and just having a positive outlook, but it's also important to them.
That's
You
extraordinary.
know, I mean, we're a very close family, and my son that lives and works in DC,
Yeah.
you know, I talk to him on the phone every day. So
That's amazing. Yeah, I usually try to incorporate the two. As you know, 27 North is still a fairly new company, so it takes all of my time.
I bet.
And so I found a good way to balance it is just to incorporate my family, my church, in my work.
Oh,
And
I love that.
It's
Yeah.
working out well until there's a miscommunication. And then it seems like there's no division and everything is falling apart. Do you ever bring your family along on a campaign or in your work?
Absolutely. Anytime I have events that are in Southeast Missouri,
yeah,
some of my children will attend.
That's amazing.
And, you know, they're very supportive of
Yeah.
me. My son, a lot of times, if I'm doing meetings all day in Cape Girardeau or Sikeston or somewhere nearby, a lot of times I'll text him and say, hey, I'm working in this town today. I'll be here most of the day. Do you want to, are you free for lunch? Because he works, you know, around Southeast Missouri also. And sometimes we can meet up like that, but we make sure that, you know, other than, of course, I'm sure y'all have it, the family group text,
Yep.
you know, we know what all we're doing
Yeah.
from the family group
That
text.
could sometimes be a chore within itself. Too many times people are so hesitant at taking that first step towards a new career opportunity, starting a business, going into politics. You know, whenever people ask me, and sometimes it's every day, you know, where'd you start? How'd you start? I started my mom's garage. And
Oh,
the
wow.
best advice I give is, you know, just get started. What made you kind of take that first step into politics?
You know, I wasn't raised around politics.
Yeah.
You know, my mom was more of a gypsy. She was an artist. And so I wasn't raised around politics. And at 15, pregnant and, you know, cleaning houses and trying to pay my rent for the
Wow.
week, I didn't know who the president was. You know,
Wow.
I mean, that didn't, I was in survival mode
Yeah.
and just trying to get by. So I started working in the mailroom of a cable company, just posting payments when I
Yeah.
was 19.
Yeah.
I worked my way up from there. And after 14 years, I was one of the top five directors in the company,
Wow.
director of government affairs. And in that position, I was asked to come to Jefferson City to help on some bills that were affecting our industry.
Wow.
That was my first look at government. And I was very disappointed. And that's when I really started paying attention, and when I went home and said, you know what, when the kids are old enough, I'm going to run for office. And I always tease, but, you know, my husband didn't argue with me. I was raised in trailer parks, so
Wow.
he didn't want to.
Yeah.
But I was very passionate about it. And
Yeah.
it was once I saw that connection between the policy and the advocacy that goes on politically, and how that truly does affect our lives at home, our business at home, our children's education, all of these important things. I'm like, well, I'm so frustrated with politics right now. And I can't just be frustrated if I can do something about it.
Yeah.
And so I decided, you know what, when kids are old enough and we can do it, I'm running for office. I did, and I won, which shocked me, shocked everybody. But
Yeah.
I've worked hard, and I care about my
Yeah.
constituents.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'm not, I think the best legislators are the ones who are okay with being voted out.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with being voted out. But I am going to get good things done while I'm there. I always say, you know, God's given me a microphone.
Yeah.
And as long as he gives it to me,
Yeah.
I'm going to use it. And so when he tells me, you know, that I'm done, I'll be done. But
Yeah.
It's important to fight and to help others while I have the opportunity.
That's extraordinary. God gave me a microphone and I'm going to use it.
I'm going to use it.
I'm going to make that a quote. Can I quote you on that?
Absolutely.
That's amazing.
Absolutely.
You know, too many times we spoke about adversity, and too many times I see it in a lot of people's lives, especially people wanting to make a change. I see it in the church today. I see it in businesses. I see it in families, and we see it in politics. And I know for myself, it's sometimes from people that you least expect it from that give you that pushback. You had mentioned from your own party. I've experienced it from my family. I've experienced it from friends. And for me, you know, I just, it's so hard. It almost like takes the air out of your lungs. And so many times I just wish I could sit down and tell that person, hey, can you just spend a day with me in my shoes? Can you see from my perspective what I'm overcoming? What is a little thing that you wish you could tell someone who's giving you that pushback, someone who's bringing that adversary into your life that they may not know or that the general public may not know?
You know, it's one of the things, being in politics, you have 50% of the people mad at you at all times. You know,
it's
you
just the same in business.
You just do. And it's like, I am someone who I'm going to listen to both sides of an argument, both sides of a bill.
Yeah.
I'm going to gather as much information as possible, and then I'm going to vote on it. And my gathering of information includes those that are in the trenches that this actually affects, this piece of policy actually affects.
Yeah.
When the most pushback that I get are from people that are sitting behind their computer screen, pulling stuff off of social media, people that won't go dig in and read a bill themselves or go look up something, both sides of an issue, they'll take a little clip off of social media and decide, you know, that that's the gospel.
Yeah.
When it's not. And I'm not going to vote a certain way because of the wrath of a few people calling me and, you know, and calling me every name in the book. I don't really care.
Yeah.
I'm going to vote on the way that God tells me in my gut after I have gone through all of the information on both sides of it. And so it's important to become educated on the issues that you are passionate about. If you see something on Facebook that enrages you, dig into it first. Find out both sides of this issue before you get mad at everybody who doesn't agree with you, you know? And we would have so, politics, God made us a beautiful quilt, like patchwork quilt, you know?
Yeah.
We're all coming from different worlds. And so you only know what you know, what you were raised in, what you know, the piece of the world that you've seen, that you've experienced. So you have to sit back, listen, gather information to really make a good educated decision.
Yeah.
Because the things that I vote on affect everyone in this state.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't take that lightly.
Yeah. I remember my father-in-law would tell me whenever I experience turmoil or adversity in my life, he says, Pavel, where there's smoke, there's a fire. You got to find out what started the fire and put it out and not fight the smoke.
That's a good way to put it. Yes.
I think that's relatable for all of us today.
Absolutely.
Especially seeing what's going on in the world that we live in today. I really believe there's a lot of smoke out there.
There is a lot of smoke. Yeah. I like that.
And if we would just spend a little less time fighting the smoke and finding the source, it's very relatable in my day-to-day life for business too. You know, every now and then you'll it's almost like a wave of drama, like a misunderstanding, and you'll go and you'll find the source. And it's like, oh, that's not what I meant. It's like,
that's
we should have started with that instead of letting the smoke cloud our judgment.
Yes.
I write about it in my book, you know, what it takes. And I think one of the things that it takes to be successful in any industry, any walk of life, is being able to do your own investigation, your own research, finding out the full story. There was a time when I remember talking to a young man, and I just shared kind of like one snippet from my life, like what caused me to sell my house, sell my wife's car, move in with my in-laws, start my business. And I just shared that like my starting point, and it like really inspired him. He's like, wow, that just changed the course of my life.
Oh my goodness.
What would you say is that story in your life that really has that impact on other people? What is that inspirational story in your life that when you share with people, they're like, wow, that changed my life?
You know, I speak at different events across the state on, I've been asked to speak at domestic violence conferences. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in horrific domestic violence, drug addiction conferences, recovery, treatment conferences, sexual abuse, wow, conference, you know, that are centered around victims of sexual abuse. When I speak and I'm so open and honest about the things that I've lived through, yeah, about the things that, you know, my sisters and I grew up in, and then my own mistakes, and I own them, because that is what makes me who I am today, yeah, are the things that I've gone through, and I am so thankful to get to share them and what my daughter has been through. And, you know, my grandson being born with opioids in his system and me having to take custody of him for several years while, wow, my daughter was still out there, you know, sometimes me not even knowing if she was alive. When I talk about these things, once I've finished speaking, I have people lined up to talk to me,
wow,
because they've been hiding and ashamed of this or that, when it's not something to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
The mistakes that I've made, I've learned from them. I'm going to make other mistakes, and I pray that I always learn from them. The things that I have lived through, you know, my grandfather, who was the only man in my life, sexually abusing me, and then me many years later being the one to move in and take care of him while he had cancer and while he passed away.
Wow.
Me forgiving him, God giving me the ability to forgive him, blessed my life.
Wow.
It blessed me tremendously. And having the ability to forgive the things that have happened to me and make them a learning and an ability for others to let go of those things.
Yeah.
Because the Bible says that, you know, bitterness rots the bones.
Yeah.
That's your bones.
Yeah.
It's your bitterness rots your bones.
Yeah.
Like, it's not,
yeah,
help, it's not harming the person that did these things,
yeah,
to you.
Yeah.
So when I speak or visit, or when someone reads my book and then they reach out and say, man, you helped me understand my mother. So I never could understand why she was the way that she was. And it's those things that it's like God's given me a beautiful story,
yeah,
that he helps others through. And like me being that vessel for him is just, I can't even explain it. It's so special.
Wow. You're bringing tears to my eyes and taking my words. I don't even know how to answer or what to say. I really hope that the world hears your story. I really hope that it continues to impact lives around the world. I can feel it in this moment impacting me. Like,
oh, thank you.
So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. Wow, that's extraordinary.
Yeah, God's been very good to me.
Yeah. The work that God's doing in your life, both in your family and your career, where do you see this leading to? Where do you see it going? I want to first start with your career and your personal life right now.
So my career, you know, I'm just that person that, you know, I'm running for lieutenant governor. And there are so many good things that I could do for the people of the state from that office. And that is why I'm running for lieutenant governor. It is to delve into some, you know, our foster care system outpaces other states our size. And it's because of the high occurrence of children being removed from substance abuse homes. You know, there's so much work that could be done to improve that system. There, you know, our veteran suicide rate is higher than the national average.
Yeah.
We have the ability that we could do psilocybin is something that has been shown to be more effective than the SSRIs that our veterans are being handed that have side effects of suicide.
Wow.
And so there are so many things that I could be doing from the Lieutenant Governor's position that would really delve into some of these problem areas and be able to be more helpful. And so as far as my career, I look forward to winning the Lieutenant Governor's office and really working on some of these serious issues, expanding our recovery and treatment options, you know, in the state, helping people stay in their jobs while they're getting treatment for their addiction makes sense, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it makes sense. It helps everybody. But as a state, there's a lot of those type of areas. To have someone that has been through and lived through the things that I have a little bit different focus than people like we were talking about that's been raised with the silver spoon in their mouth that really, you know, it just goes in and says, hey, I'm going to work on, you know, building highways and this. And it's
bridges.
Like, okay, bridges. And it's like, okay, but what are you going to do for the people? Because the human capital of this state matters.
Yeah.
And if God really quickens in my spirit to run for governor after, you know, 8 years in the lieutenant governor's spot, I would absolutely take that risk and make that jump. But if he tells me, Holly, go home and love on those grandbabies, I will do that too.
That's so amazing how you see, like, it's a win or win. There's not a
either way.
It's a win or win. That means a lot to me. My wife and I are foster parents, and we've fostered now 11 children in the last 5 years, four or five years.
My goodness.
Yeah. I'll never forget our first placement. It was like midnight, 1 a.m. and we're already in bed. And I get a phone call and I look at it and usually I don't answer, but I really think God put in my heart to answer it. So I answer it. And the young lady says, hey, I'm from Children's Division. Note, this is middle of the winter. And she's like, well, the Springfield PD found 4 little children outside in the freezing temperatures. The youngest was an infant in a car seat. He was so dirty, the clothes were sticking to his clothing, or the clothing was sticking to his skin. The oldest was 6 years old, so 4 siblings, all little ones, freezing temperatures. They're like, we really need someone to take them
in. Were they in an abandoned car? Or
no, outside.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, freezing temperatures. Springfield PD later found the birth mother, and she said she just left them for a moment to run in and find housing for them because they didn't have housing. But, yeah, they never did figure out how long they were out there. They didn't know how long she was going to leave them there for. But when we got the call, this was our first placement. So this was about 5 years ago.
Four babies.
Yeah. This was before I started the business. We were like, you know, early 20s, just finished college. I haven't had children of our own.
You got one that's little enough to be in a car seat.
Yeah. So I'm like, can we take one of them? Like, that's 4 children. We're like, can we take one of them? And they're like, we really don't want to break the sibling bunch. But it's 1 a.m., so taking one is more than taking 4. And so I wake my wife up. We're like, all right, let's go do this. And my wife just says, like, how would God want us to do in this situation? And
I
just,
my goodness.
I felt the presence of God. And I'm like, God would never want me to break up this sibling bunch. And now this battle. So we're driving downtown in this battle. Take 4 kids, take 1 kid, take 2. So finally, I'm a businessman at heart. So I'm like negotiating with myself, my wife, and God. So there's like this whole negotiation going on. So finally, I'm up to 2. So I'm like, all right, I'll take 2 of the kiddos. And then and on top of that, I'm working construction. We're barely making ends meet. I got college loans, student loans I'm paying off. I got a minivan that's like $1,000. Like, we're paper plates. So we're already living very humble, modestly. And so, yeah, we don't have car seats. We don't have kids' clothing. And so I, halfway downtown, I called the caseworker and I'm like, hey, we'll take all four. And I just hear her gasping for air, crying on the airline. She's like, you don't understand what this means to us. The kids are hugging each other. We can't even take them apart to change their clothing. She's like, I just want to tell you their hair is a mess. Like when we got them, their hair was like in little knots and the boy's hair was very long. So it was like gum and food. We ended up having to cut all their hair off. Mm. And so I was like, but I need your help. I'm like, we don't have car seats. We don't have baby clothing. We don't have the money to go buy four kids worth of diapers and clothing.
Or breakfast, probably. Yeah.
She's like, don't worry. We'll take care of everything for you. I'm like, if you can help us with that, we'll take them in. And so here we are. We pick them up. She had car seats and hand-me-down clothes. And we bring them home. We get them cleaned up, tuck them into bed. At this point, it's like 3 or 4 a.m. And my wife and I are just like, what do we get ourselves into? But we're like, God's going to help us through this. I think that changed my life. That experience there.
Oh, that had to.
By the time that it was almost a year later, their own parents couldn't recognize the kiddos. I mean,
you had them for a year.
Yeah, almost a year, just under a year. Complete transformation. I remember looking at pictures when we got them and pictures when they left. Extraordinary.
Did they go back to their
parents? Yeah, so success reunification. It was just such a God-given moment. Dad had a come to Jesus moment. Mom had a come to Jesus moment. Life 360 Church helped them acquire a home, helped them acquire a job. Like, it was such an amazing experience. And we're like early 20s.
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
most people don't even have four children in the span of their lifetime.
No, or ever even babysit four children together.
Such a learning curve. I remember it was a four-year-old boy. It was one of the little ones. He would, from like cussing and calling my wife like every cuss word you could think of. Like, my wife's got a good heart, so she could like over. For me though, I was like, four-year-old calling my wife things that no woman should ever be called.
You know, and that is, and it's children. It's that first education.
Yeah.
It's what the things being spoken to them is how they're treating other people.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I can only imagine. One was a six-year-old.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine you had a six, a four-year-old, and what, an infant.
Infant, and then it was like 2.5-ish.
So probably
one after
talking
another.
Already.
Yeah.
So you had three that already had their personalities.
Oh, it was. But it was amazing, like not giving up and putting the work into them. It almost reminds me of like what I'm experiencing in my business, what you're doing in the state of Missouri. It's just never giving up. I remember the four-year-old, like he's tantrum, cussing at my wife. And, you know, you can't do anything. You can't spank. You can't restrain. You call the social worker and she just tells you what other kids are doing. You're like, okay, I get it. I remember one night and I'm just like, I'm following him around. He's throwing a tantrum. He's like making holes in the walls. And I'm
my gosh.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, what do you need? Like, what do you need? Like, tell me, I'll get you anything at this point. And he sits next to me on my bed. And he's like, I just want my father. Mm. And I'm just like, how many people out there just need someone, whether it's a parent, God, a good boss, a good job, a good career? To fast forward towards the end, I remember rushing out of the house one morning, and typically we would say grace in the morning together, and I'm running late to work, and I'm at the door, breakfast plate in hand, and he runs up to me, and he was calling us dad at that point, and he's like, dad, you forgot something. And I'm like, what is it? And he goes, you forgot to pray. Right? Like, imagine the patience.
Oh, my goodness.
I see it in my life in every retrospect. I believe if we invested 9 years like you did in your bill, 9 years into our friends, 9 years into our business, 9 years into our church, our kids, our spouses. Imagine the things we could accomplish if we just be like persistent and not give up.
And you taking those babies in, you protected them as a group, as a unit, as a family.
Yeah.
You protected their family while mom and dad was pulling it together. Yeah. And I mean, that was a moment that was the trajectory for their future. That you guys made that difference. And it's a positive difference.
Yeah.
It can be a negative difference, but you guys made that positive difference. And when it comes to fostering children, I mean, that's such a major step. Mm. But wow, I mean, it changes generations.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It's incredible.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. That is incredible. And your wife.
Yes, she is amazing. I think she was here with us just a moment ago. So many young people, older people too. I was actually talking to an older gentleman, 67, 68 years old, and he's like, can you inspire me to start? So I'm a firm believer, if the famous quote, if you didn't do it in your 40s, you can do it in your 50s, if you didn't do it in your 50s. And it goes all the way to, keep in mind, this famous woman succeeded in her 90s.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so what words of kind of words of affirmation, or what kind of encouragement would you have to individuals today in regards to taking that first step? How could you inspire? What would you tell them early on, regardless of their age?
You know, I think that Moses didn't start until he was really old, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, you can look at examples all through the Bible and see that the promised land is a ways away,
yeah,
no matter what. And so get started.
Yeah.
Get started. And, you know, when you think about, like, Joseph in the Bible, you know, my goodness, he kept getting knocked down, you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He his brothers sold him, and then he gets to working in Potiphar's house, and then he gets elevated there because he's the hardest worker. He, you know, is throwing everything he's got into
yeah.
it. And then because he's handsome, you know, Potiphar's wife takes a liking to him. And then yeah. when he doesn't reciprocate, because she's married, he gets, you know, she lies on him, and then he gets thrown in jail, and it's
yeah.
like he did nothing but being a good yeah. man and not reciprocate with this married woman. He gets thrown in jail, and then he helps these two people in jail,
yeah.
you know, and then that worked for the king, then they go, or for the Pharaoh, and then they go get out and they forget about him.
Yeah.
And so you can. And then he, you know, then they needed somebody who could interpret dreams. And of course, that was his gift that God had given him.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden, you know, oh, they remember Joseph, who's in jail. And it's
yeah.
like, you know, not only was he thrown in a hole by his brothers,
yeah.
then he's thrown in jail. And so he has all of these years of that. But then that day comes.
Yeah.
The day comes that the Pharaoh calls him. He just does what he's supposed to do. And he says, hey, I can't interpret your dream, but God can, and does it. And then Pharaoh's like, I'm putting you in charge of everything.
Yeah.
And so the day comes, but you have to be diligent, and you have to stay in there, and you can't, you one, have to get started, and two, you, as we talked about, adversity is going to come, and it's going to knock you off your horse, but you just get back on it, shake it off, and keep going. But the day will come for you to have your promised land.
Yeah, that's amazing you say that. That's my favorite Bible story, is the story of Joseph.
Oh.
I literally felt and still feel like him.
I bet.
I remember one of the lowest moments I had in my career was early on. I was very, very radical in my views in regards to my faith. And it was just so unusual for the church I was attending at the time. And it got to the point where they wanted to just ask me to completely leave the church. And
yeah.
my wife asked me how you're feeling. And I said, I feel like Joseph. And she's like, you feel that good? I'm like, no, when Joseph was in jail, that's how I feel. And, you know, time has passed. And a couple months ago, Pastor Alex Shevchenko, he's one of the biggest pastors in the Slav community in the entire world. He calls me, he's like, hey, you want to go on tour with me across the U.S. and speak in 5 different cities? I'm like, wow. I would love to.
How about that?
Yeah, so it's interesting how life has its turn of events.
With a phone call.
One phone call, yeah.
And now you're being set on a stage.
Yeah,
out
of Springfield, Missouri.
You know?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, that shows the power of God.
Amen.
Yeah. You know, we have to be tested.
Yeah.
And we have to, you know, and a lot of times we go through the same test over and over again until we actually pass it.
And learn.
And learn, right.
Yeah.
But that is That's incredible. But that is so much how God works.
Yeah, very true. Before we transition towards the end of covering questions and answers and talking about actual clothing, did you have any final thoughts or final words that you'd like to share and just let the world hear?
You know, God has always been my compass. And that is, I wake up every morning wanting to be pleasing to Him. And regardless of who I upset because of my political beliefs or my core values, my morals will always be biblical based. And I will always strive. He is the one person that I must please. That is who my heart wants to please. Everything else will fall into place or fall away.
Yeah.
But as long as I'm staying true to Him, then I'm happy and I have peace. And that's what's most important, is that you have peace in your life. And you know, we can get to striving after things that really don't matter when you look back.
Yeah.
But, you know, as an older mama, I can say now, you know, in my 20s, trying to raise babies and make enough money to feed them and all the things, it was such a race.
Yeah.
But now, as the 54-year-old mama, I can look back and it's like, man, God's done some beautiful things in my life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, take time to see your blessings every day.
That's extraordinary. Like you mentioned early on, it's a win-win regardless.
Yeah, no matter what.
That's amazing. So the podcast is called Suits and Shoes. And so not only did we get a chance to walk in your shoes and experience what your life is from your perspective, the reason I really highlight the actual physical clothing is I grew up very poor, hand-me-downs. I still remember the first time. And not the pretty ones, not the really.
You had 11, you had 10 siblings.
So it was the hand-me-downs that were given to my siblings and then handed down from my siblings to me. So it was like super hand-me-downs, we'll put it that way. I still remember the day I bought my first pair of brand new tennis shoes freshman year of high school. I wore them for 5 years. I'd wash them every evening. I'd take care of them. They looked just as good when I started college freshman year that they did freshman year of high school.
That's right, because you take care of them. I'm the same way.
Oh, yeah. And so I was always curious, you know, what successful people wear. And so fast forward through life, I finally get to meet my first nine-figure, my first 10-figure individuals, the governor himself, and I'm right away like, hey, what do you wear? What do you wear off camera? What do you wear in your personal life? And they're like, clothes have no meaning to us. And I'm like, pardon me? So none
yes,
of those
they
big
do. They do to me.
And so what does clothing mean to you? I want to start from your personal life. Like if I was to run into you at a grocery store, what would we see?
So if you were to run into me at a grocery store, I am a blue jeans and boots girl. And that's what I'm comfortable in, you know, and that's what you're going to find me in. Now, in my professional life and growing up, as you did, you know, having something new was not, that did not happen.
Yeah.
I became a seamstress. Like I can make my own clothes and whatever I was able to save money for, and I would get it from like the Salvation Army or the Goodwill, you know, or if somebody would give me something, then I would tailor it to fit me and make something nice out of it. As once I became successful, a successful business owner, and I could splurge on something, red bottom shoes.
Yeah.
You know, they are too expensive. I never would have been able to buy them. It is, and it's the pair that I have on, I've had for 5 years.
Yeah.
My favorite pair of expensive shoes, not red bottoms, but I've had for 16 years and they look brand new. I get compliments on them every single time I wear them. But it is shoes, and it goes back to what you were saying, like I never had something new. And I still remember in the sixth grade when a boy in the little, you know, where you go and you have, I don't know if I'm a lot older than you, but we used to have like an hour that they called our study hour.
Yeah.
And they would put us in this room with vending machines and stuff. Well, I never got to buy anything from the vending machine, right? You know? And so I would sit over and try to do my work. And this one boy, he says, you know, well, Holly, where did you get your shoes? The Salvation Army. And I looked down and they did have holes in them and everything. But you know what? I mean, they were tennis shoes and I loved having them and I took care of them. And it just broke my heart because it's like, I can't do anything about this. And so I think that is why once I became a successful business owner and could do a little splurging on myself, when I'm going to splurge, and I will save up for them. Like, it's not like I can go out and buy a pair. Like, I will have to save up for them. But I will spend it on an expensive pair of shoes.
Yeah. I'm the same way. I remember when I bought my first pair of shoes, I said, I'm not going to stop working until I can have all the shoes I want.
Oh, I love that.
And so, yes, I've done my fair share of splurging. Like, when I find a pair that I like, I get one in every color.
Oh, I like
it. My wife's been getting on to me that I own more shoes than her. I have a shoe rack when you come in. I have a shoe rack in my closet. I have a shoe rack in the garage. All the shoes I ever want.
It's so cool because when you wear the same pair for 5 years or, you know, or until your feet have poked out of the end of them, you know, or the soles have started flapping off the bottom. It's so cool that now you can pick a pair of shoes to go with each outfit.
Yeah.
Like, that brings me joy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I still remember recently I had one of my soles start coming apart and I went and got some super glue and I'm gluing them. And then I'm sitting thinking, I could buy 100 of pairs of these. I'm sitting here trying to super glue the shoe.
Yeah. Hey, but you know what? Sometimes, though, you're like, I just had my soles re-sewed on my boots because it's like, I'm just not ready.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, sometimes I just get attached to it. And it's like, no, these are my comfy boots. Surely we can fix this little sole problem I've got. You get creative when you're making, you know, because you've learned how to make stuff last.
Yeah, that's amazing. In conclusion, I'm going to go through some of the questions that came. So we have one gentleman that, successful business owner, he asked me to ask you, what is the best car for road trips as a senator?
Ooh, the best car for road trips. So, really, I would say there's not a best car. It depends on what you're doing. Like, if you're out putting up 4x8 signs, then you need a good pickup truck. And, you know, I mean, you need to be able to put your stakes in the back and have your post hole digger back there. Yeah. If you're driving, you know, across the state, and our state is very large in mileage. And if you drive across the state, for someone like me, who's, you know, like I said, 54 years old, I need something that's going to be a little bit smoother ride so that, you know, so that I don't, my back isn't hurting by the time I get 5 hours across the state. But it really just depends on what you're doing.
Yeah. Have you made the transition to electrical cars yet?
I have not.
Yeah. I recently did, 2 years ago, and it's been a game changer for me.
Has it?
Yeah.
So isn't it, so like with me, like how many hours worth do you get before you have to recharge?
So for me, I get about 2 days worth
about
250 miles.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then I have a charger at work and a charger at home, and it's about 4 hours to charge it up all the way.
I'm all about saving money,
but
I better stick with gas for a while.
I mean, you're driving all over the state. Someone else asked, why are the food standards in Europe significantly higher than the United States, and what can we do about it?
That's an excellent question. And lobby your member of Congress. Because, you know, it is unfortunate, but the FDA approves things that they get lobbied on. And when you look at, say, what the sugar industry has done to America, that is from the sugar industry having a lobby right? And so we have a lot of things in our food that other countries absolutely would not. And I work out and I try to eat clean as much as possible. And like, I care about that stuff. Yeah. And you know, I want to be healthy and to live a long time, be here for my grandbabies, yeah, to watch them grow up. But the things being put in our food.
Oh, it's bad.
is bad. And yeah, we really do. I mean, you need to, all of that is done on the federal level. Yeah. And so lobbying Congress and trying to work on some of those things is, that's important because yeah, it's all approved by the, you know, FDA.
I agree. This is a successful business owner. He has a huge trucking company out of Chicago, actually. Maybe we can convince him to move to Missouri.
Yeah.
he asks, how do you become a senator?
So, you know, I was a representative first, mm-hmm, but becoming a representative or becoming a senator, basically, you really work whatever district that you live mm-hmm in. You really work, you get involved in the community if you're not already involved in the different communities. And you start talking about why you want to run for office. And if you have people that jump on board and want to help you and say, yes, that is what we need. We need you, you know, let me help you. Yeah. Then, you know, that's how you start. You just start by getting around, getting in front of as many people as possible, sharing your vision for the state, mm-hmm, for your district with them. And, you know, you garner those votes, yeah, and then you file for office and you take the risk.
That's amazing. I just had a flashback to earlier in our interview when you said, if God takes you governor, how cool would that be? You'd be the first woman governor in Missouri, right?
I would.
That's, wow, that's amazing. Well, count my vote when that time
Thank
comes.
Thank you, yes. I would be.
Let's do one more question. I like this one. So this is a mom and successful real estate agent from the West Coast, I'm sorry. And she's asking, what is your bedtime routine look like?
Oh, she's
sounds like
she's
a businesswoman.
Got a great question. Yes. So, wash my face, take my mascara off, and I have very dry skin, so mm-hmm, I have to use a lot of moisturizer. And then when I get in bed, I use the lamp instead mm-hmm of the overhead light because, of course, you know, the light stimulates and yeah, it keeps your brain ticking. And then I do a little bit of reading, mm-hmm, usually play a little bit of Sudoku puzzle, and then go to sleep.
That's amazing.
Take my allergy medicine,
yes,
and then go to sleep.
Yeah, wonderful. Hey, thank you so much once again. You've inspired me, and this podcast is really going to inspire tens of thousands of people across our country and even around the world.
I'm excited to see it. Thank you for having me on. It really means a lot to me.
Yes, you're very much welcome. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for making this hour special. Thank you for following our journey. And I look forward to continuing to share the hidden stories behind the leaders of today's world. Thank you so much, and God bless you.